Lucian K. Truscott IV is an author and a journalist. He is a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy and the great-great-great-great-grandson of Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States. As widespread calls for racial justice continue to sound across our nation, Mr. Truscott spoke out in an articulate New York Times op-ed headlined, "I'm a direct descendant of Thomas Jefferson. Take down his memorial." Intrigued by his arguments, I am pleased to welcome Lucian K. Truscott to State of Belief Radio. Thank you so much for being with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
You write about growing up playing at Monticello, the historic Jefferson Plantation in Virginia. What was that like?
They would put us in a Buick and drive us up the mountain to Monticello, and they'd drive right onto the lawn of Monticello and park the car and open up the door. We had the run of the place. You're talking to one of the few people in the world that's probably played on Thomas Jefferson's bed. We used to get up in the closet up above his bed in that little alcove and look down at tourists when they were coming through on tours. And we'd fill our pockets with pebbles from the walks around Monticello and go up in that second and third floors and get out on those little parapets and drop pebbles on tourists. As I said in the article, we would play in the rooms that they at that time called the dependencies, which were actually slave quarters under the east and west wings of Monticello. And at that time, those little slave quarters, they just used as storerooms. There weren't any displays. In fact, Monticello didn't talk about slavery or the fact that Jefferson owned slaves at all in those tours. So we would just go down and play. We played in the room that they eventually, in the last couple of years, identified as Sally Hemings's room, along with her brother Peter. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. And we sort of took it for granted. You know, we knew we were descended from Thomas Jefferson and all that. And, you know, it was fun.
Yeah. Lucian, what are the reasons you offer for replacing Jefferson in a place of honor in our nation's capital?
Well, I think that Monticello is enough. I think that Monticello is a much better memorial to Jefferson because it's a complete memorial. It contextualizes his entire life. When you go to Monticello now, you'll learn about the lives of slaves at Monticello. You'll learn how many slaves Jefferson owned. You'll see the woodwork and so forth that Sally Hemings's brother did there. And then you'll also learn something that they never used to teach at Monticello, which is that slaves built that place. Every nail, every brick, every board, everything you see at Monticello was touched by the hands of slaves. And in fact, today, you can still go along walls at Monticello and see the fingerprints of slave children who made the bricks. I've gone with my Hemings cousins, and they've gone and looked at those fingerprints and touched them. And who knows what they could have been touching, the fingerprints of Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson's children. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, the Monticello is, for that reason, it shows Jefferson in full. It shows his flaws and his moral failings and his, the human, the things that make him human, the things that make him a man. I think that these founding fathers that we have are much better looked at as, because they're fathers, as men than as some kind of gods. You know, they're not gods. But if you go and read any biography of Jefferson, and when I took my Hemings cousins to Monticello back in 99 and 2000, I got out my biographies of Jefferson. I had a shelf full of them. And I looked at them and read, and and read some of the pages that were in them. And I discovered that within the first five pages of almost every biography of Jefferson that I had, you'd see a reference to God, and it wasn't a reference to the deity. It was saying Jefferson was the God of democracy and this and that, and he wasn't. He was a man.
Yeah.
And I think that Jefferson would have frowned quite profoundly on God's name being taken in vain to describe him.
I know you have done joint interviews with a direct descendant of Sally Hemings. Can you tell us about that relationship?
Well, it's changed me profoundly. It's turned me from a young boy who took Monticello for granted into an adult man that I don't take Monticello for granted anymore. And I also understand what Monticello was and who Thomas Jefferson was in a way that I didn't when I was a young boy. The fact that Jefferson owned slaves made him a lot like a lot of other men in the South that owned plantations and so forth. And I think it behooves us to look at him in that way. It behooves us to look at him in full. And getting to know my Hemings cousins has made my life enormously richer and fuller and better because, I've gotten to know the side of my family that's not white, that didn't grow up with the privilege that I had and so forth. And, when I was in school as a boy and we studied the Founding Fathers, and I raised my hand and said, you know what, I'm a grandson, I'm a great-grandson of Thomas Jefferson. Nobody laughed at me. Nobody pointed their finger and said, oh, that's, you're full of it. They believed me. But that didn't happen with the descendants of Sally Hemings. If they raised their hand and said that, they were, some of them, I know a few cousins of mine were sent to the principal's office. And their mothers were called to take them out of school because they were calling them liars and stuff. I've been changed profoundly as I've gotten to know more and more of my Hemings cousins. Yeah. And I attend Hemings reunions now, not Monticello reunions by white relatives.
Lucian, I'm interested in what you would say to these people who make veneration of human figures from the past almost a religious practice, who treat blind patriotism as if it were a religion and therefore the raising of any questions as a betrayal of both. Well, what do you say to those people?
Well, it's not me who's betraying history here. It was Thomas Jefferson that betrayed his own ideals. If they want to talk about betrayal, betrayal started at the founding of our country. Jefferson and the other slave owners betrayed the ideals of all men are created equal and the ideals that we had to finally write into the Constitution by owning other human beings. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you can betray these people. I really don't. It's, these people were men, not gods. And we should look at them as men. It helps to do that because it helps to understand the founding of our fathers if we understand the people that did the founding more fully and more completely. Yeah. It helps us to understand our own Constitution if we understand the failings of the people who helped to write it.
Yeah. Your articulate New York Times op-ed received a surprising number of thoughtful, nuanced comments online. Several writers are genuinely fearful of a further white nationalist backlash that would influence the November election. What are your thoughts about that?
I'm not worried about that. Those people that they're worried about backlashing are already there. Trump didn't invent racism. These racists that they're talking about backlashing were racist the day before I published that op-ed, and they're racist the day after. We shouldn't worry about them, and we shouldn't worry about some kind of backlash when you're dealing with matters of principle like this. It's obvious that the country, if Jefferson's memorial were to be taken down, I don't know that that's going to happen, but if it were, it would take some getting used to. But the country is already going through that with Monticello. It's taken people from the South years to get used to the fact that starting in the late 90s and early 2000s, when you go to Monticello on a tour, you now learn about the lives of slaves. There are still people, there are still racists that go on tours there and walk away from the tours when they start to take them and show them the slave quarters and that sort of thing, because they don't want to know about it. Well, if they don't want to know about it, then don't go to Monticello. And if they don't want to know about it, then sit at home and stew in your own racism. Those people don't concern me. I don't write my op-eds worrying about what the reaction is going to be by racists. I know what their reaction will be. When I took my Hemings cousins to Monticello in 1999 for the first time, I got over 100 death threats. I got over 100 death threats in a period of about 3 or 4 weeks. You know, I know who those people are. I know what they do. I know how they hate. And I know what it feels like to be an object of their hate. And I have to tell you, it doesn't scare me. You know, I'm not afraid of people that are so chicken that they send you anonymous letters and anonymous packages and anonymous emails. That doesn't concern me.
You know, I find it very helpful for me as you talk about Jefferson on the one hand, but what I hear you doing on the other hand is you're telling us that we need to think about the people who founded this nation and think about them realistically and humanly, not someone that is out of this world.
Absolutely. And when you learn that Jefferson had a relationship for 36 years with his slave Sally Hemings, and that he fathered 6 of her children and then raised them at Monticello and educated them. The children of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings were educated. This changed Thomas Jefferson. He wrote in the notes of the state of Virginia in the 1700s that blacks couldn't be educated and were inferior to white people. It's obvious that by the time he died in 1826, he had changed his mind about that, because his own black children were educated. And there are legions of letters and memos written between Thomas Jefferson and John Hemings, Sally's brother, arguing about the design of furniture that Jefferson designed and John Hemings made for him, arguing about the design of Poplar Grove, Jefferson's summer, you know, residence that John Hemings helped him build. Jefferson had changed his mind about race by the time he died. It's clear. It's all written down in history. It's all at Princeton, which has his collective papers. You can find those letters. So it makes Jefferson a richer, more full and rounded person when you learn how he changed over years and how he changed because of this relationship that he had with one of his slaves.
The New York Times op-ed is headlined, "I'm a Direct Descendant of Thomas Jefferson. Take Down His Memorial." The author, Lucian K. Truscott, is a writer at Salon and the great-great-great-great-grandson of Thomas Jefferson. Lucian, I really appreciate you taking time to speak with us. Thank you for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Oh, I was glad to be here. Thanks.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.